Case number 08-1150 et al. City of South Bend, Indiana et al. Petitioners versus Surface Transportation Board et al. Mr. Streeter for the petitioners, Ms. Strasser for the respondents, and Mr. Hefner for the intervener.
May it please the court. In this case, the court is asked to set aside Surface Transportation Board's conclusion that abandonment of a stub-ended branch line that has not been used for any purpose for the past 14 or 15 years should be denied in order to protect the interstate rail system. Given the absence of any shipper evidence of any future need for rail service over the line, that conclusion is arbitrary, capricious.
Doesn't the record support the proposition that the same coal could be trained with one train load as what happens over a course of a week or two in truckloads? Is that not what the record supports?
Your Honor, I could not hear you.
Right. The proposition that the coal could be carried by train and could be done in one or two train trips, what's now being done in multiple daily truckload deliveries. Is that not what the record supports?
The record suggests that if Notre Dame were willing to have the coal moved by rail, yes, it could be done after the rail was repaired and after the line had been put back together.
And given the advancing energy shortages, cost of energy, and the advancing concerns about the environment, why isn't it reasonable to assume that there's at least a possibility that in the future a different city government will not be pressuring Notre Dame because they'll be more environmentally aware or more energy cost aware, and Notre Dame would start shipping? I mean, they don't actually have to show that Notre Dame will do it, do they? Just that there's...
Your Honor, you're assuming right now something that's really not true, which is that the city did not pressure Notre Dame. Number two, Notre Dame pulled the plug on this project long before we filed the application. Notre Dame said in June, we're not going to do it this way. We like the way we've been doing it. And furthermore, it would be totally...
There was a time in history when Notre Dame did it this way, right?
Notre Dame did it this way.
And there's a time in history when Notre Dame doesn't do it this way, right?
It could well possibly be.
But they're not doing it this way now. I mean, they're not training now. They're trucking. But... they have used trains before. They've used trucks before. Why is it arbitrary and capricious to at least retain the possibility of a shift back to the more energy-efficient method of doing business?
In the long run, it might, it possibly could be, but here you have a situation where it has not happened for 14 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. Number two, the cost of repairing the line. The real reason that this was initially brought up had nothing to do with coal. It had to do with the desire of the owner of vintage trolley cars to come over, to come through the streets of South Bend, and to run a trolley operation that allegedly would go from Notre Dame through the west side of the city to the airport. Now, the problem with that is that the Northern Indiana Transportation Commuter District, NICTA, said that, wait a minute, there is no line that connects the bottom line of the branch line to its own line. So right away you have over a mile that you have to build. The total cost of electrifying this line and building the connection in order to play with the trolleys would be well into the multi-millions of dollars. This thing would never pay for itself.
Mr. Street, as the case evolved, the board treated it entirely with respect to the coal carriage and not at all with respect to trolleys, isn't that right?
That is correct. The board...
So that's the proposal that it had, or at least that it dealt with, and that we had before us.
It set it aside. Yeah. And the board simply says that, well, we want to give this little railroad, this non-carrier, an opportunity to start up a service over something that has not been had any service.
An opportunity to negotiate, really.
To negotiate. Yeah. Norfolk Southern, in its business decision, has said that we will not sell this line unless Notre Dame agrees to it.
Because Norfolk Southern has not brought this action for abandonment, right?
They have not.
And they actually opposed it at the administrative stage, although they didn't appear in court.
They did not oppose it at the administrative
stage. They filed some documents that certainly raised some question about it.
They raised this. Now, you've got to.
Now, I have got to ask you. Now, this may be deemed unfair, but because it could be jurisdictional, I think I have to ask you anyway. Can you bring an adverse abandonment under the 1994 statute?
Yes.
How? The Supreme Court's decision in Thompson was under the 1940 Act. And the Supreme Court said nothing in the statute says who must bring the petition. The 1994 action statute has the language in it that was not in the 1940 Act, that is to say, a rail carrier providing transportation subject to the jurisdiction of the board who intends to abandon any part of rails must file an application, and has no language providing for the filing of adverse abandonments. So, my question to you, and I think I would like to have some supplemental briefing on this, is whether there is still jurisdiction to hear adverse abandonment actions. What is your theory of why there is still?
My theory is that so long as the Tex-Mex case has never been overruled, and it was not
but there's been a statutory change.
There hasn't been
a judicial overruling, but Congress has acted in the intervention and changed, Congress acted in the interim, and change the language of the statute in a way that makes it different from the statute, part of the reasoning of the Supreme Court. So you don't have to have an overruling if you have a statutory change. So given if there were no Tex-Mex case, and there isn't under this statute, how do we have jurisdiction, how did the board have jurisdiction to hear this abandonment without an application from the carrier?
If I may, we'll submit that under supplemental briefing.
I might supplement the question by saying the statute says an abandonment or discontinuance may be carried out only as authorized under this chapter. And the only way an abandonment's authorized is if the rail carrier seeks the abandonment, which was, as I read NSR's position before the board, that really was their position. Is that not right?
Well, I think really the answer to this is
they're concerned about modern handcraft and this whole line of adverse abandonment cases and the statute. You know, I usually start with the text of the statute. The statute doesn't even seem to contemplate this, which is probably why this is so confused and trying to figure out what's going on.
That could possibly be. Plus, I think the railroads themselves have a general antipathy to the adverse abandonment proceedings in that it would take away a line. But I think that the general principle that is well established here is that the present or future public convenience and necessity, and if it is that we can bring it, there is nothing here where you have any evidence of any shipper that has ever stepped forward to say, look, we want service in the future. The balancing test that this court has said that the board must apply looks to the railroad. All right, Norfolk Southern, basically, when they reached the conclusion that they would not sell it, we approached them and said, all right, will you abandon it? The problem comes about.
They did not petition to abandon.
The reason, Your Honor, is very simple.
Whoa. They did not petition to abandon, right?
They did not.
Right. And never have yet done so.
We talked to them before, and I say we. This is not the city. I was representing just the brothers and the sisters at the time. With the OFA, the Office of Financial Assistance provisions in the Act, if Norfolk Southern had stepped forward to abandon the line, it was very clear that we're going to have an OFA and we're going to have to fight this battle. Norfolk Southern said, you go ahead, you can file the adverse abandonment, but we do not want the board to expand the definition of what's in place today in terms of what the standards are, of what costs.
They seem to want the board to contract.
Well, they would love to have the board contract, yeah. But in this particular instance, this line is going to lie dormant for eternity if it's not abandoned.
Can I ask you one question to try to understand the statute and what's going on here? If NSR had petitioned for abandonment, then the procedures under 109.04 would have kicked in, correct?
Correct.
And the CLS would have had an opportunity to purchase the line under those procedures, correct?
That is correct.
So isn't it odd that CLS seems to have fewer rights in an adverse abandonment situation than they would have in an abandonment situation where the carrier had petitioned for abandonment?
That is the way that the board has traditionally interpreted, the board and the ICC before. They recognize that if they find that the public convenience and necessity requires or permits the abandonment of a line of railroad, that it makes no sense to allow an offer of financial assistance to come in effect undermine their determination of public convenience and necessity. So as a result,
it wouldn't undermine, it would be a factor in making the determination.
Not really, because they would have made the decision already. And in this instance,
it would be a changed factor. It's not undermining a decision.
If you find that there is no need for a line and another railroad comes in, or a non-railroad, as is the case here, and says, oh, yes, there is, and
then why shouldn't you hear them? Why shouldn't you hear them? If you have made that determination without their participation, they come in and offer new evidence, why shouldn't you hear them?
If they have new evidence. But in this instance, what evidence do they have? The record clearly shows that there is not a single shipper that's available for this line that is willing to use it. Notre Dame is the one that, as I say, pulled the plug, short-circuited, however you want to put it.
You made the decision, if you're the board or the commission in the older days, on the basis that the line is effectively useless. Someone comes forward to demonstrate, or at least offer some support for the proposition, that the line is not effectively useless. We'll take it over. We'll operate it. Why shouldn't the board or the commission re-examine its decision based on that new factor?
Why waste the time and money if there is no clear possibility that the line can be restored? And this is a classic case. It's been 14 or 15 years since any traffic moved over that line. Look at the photographs. I mean, it goes right through the heart of a residential neighborhood, over to two campuses, and on to a third. There is no reason whatsoever, and it would be ridiculous to allow somebody to come in after the board has found that, look, this deserves to be abandoned, and now you come in with no support and say that you can make it work.
That's not the case we have, though, is it?
What if diesel were $20 a gallon? It'd look different.
At that point, it may have made sense to retain it. We're not at that point. That's not in the record.
But you're asking us to foreclose the possibility of dealing with the $20 diesel by the reinstitution of train transportation in competition with truck transportation. You want us to foreclose that possibility. We're not saying it's going to happen, but why should we tell the board they have to foreclose that possibility?
The alternative is to leave a line in place that is serving no good. And how long do you have to let it sit there?
Right. Well, the alternative is to leave a line in place that is not currently being used.
Currently.
We all know that. That doesn't answer the proposition.
Well, it doesn't answer the question, but nobody anticipated in 1901 or whenever this line was built that you were going to be building a residential community for senior citizens either. Times do change.
Right.
Given
that times change, why should we foreclose the possibility of the transportation in that area changing with them? Or why should we require the board to foreclose it?
Simply because the dynamics of the city have changed. If you reinstitute service, you're going to have 19, I think, crossings. You're going to have continuous noise. Give the citizens a break for a chance.
Well,
this line is not wanted by anyone.
We're talking about two or three trains a week, right? Mm-hmm. Right now you've got, I don't remember how many truckloads it was, but quite a number. So I'm not sure that helps the case. But let me ask you this.
When you have a truck every other hour and a half or so, it slips right in and nobody even notices it. It doesn't go, the allegation was made it goes through a depressed area. It doesn't. It goes from the Norfolk Southern, where it's picked up and brought in. It's blended into the community for 15 years.
Let me ask you this. The commission closed by saying that this was without prejudice to renewing the application after a reasonable time, presumably a reasonable time for CLS to show that it could do something. Is there any history to that phrase in the case law?
They have done it a couple of times. In the Yakima case, they did it. That's the only one I'm personally aware of.
Anything that illuminates what a reasonable time is, or is that presumably?
No, there isn't. Okay. And as far as we're concerned, they've had 3 years to convince Notre Dame. They've had since June of 2006 to go to Notre Dame and say, look, your proposal doesn't make sense. Diesel may be at $25. This would save you money. The thing is that the truck and the rail, it's not going to save Notre Dame a penny because it's going to be the same rate, apparently.
Right now.
Notre Dame did say, as I recall in one of the letters, that either the newspaper article or the subsequent letter, that if among the various ifs that would have to be resolved before it would change its position was if the community opposition went away. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Suggesting that community opposition was one of its present reasons for declining.
This was a hot issue. There's no doubt about it.
A hot issue because the community is divided, I gather.
No, the community is not divided. The community
are there letters
is,
to the editor or something?
It starts off at a kind of a semi-industrial area. Then it moves through a residential area, crosses the St. Joe River, goes through another residential area onto the campuses. That whole stretch, not one single citizen stepped forward to say, hey, we want it. They didn't say they
wanted
it.
No, it's always going to be somebody who's not on the adjacent to the line who's going to be in favor.
Yeah,
that's always the case. It's always NIMBY.
Back when I was representing NIMBYs, that was always the case.
Well, we all represent those.
I'm still confused about, under the statute, you make these arguments about letting the track sit there forever unused. But under the statute, if NSR had come in and sought to abandon, then there would have been an opportunity for purchase, right?
That is correct.
I'm still trying to figure out, isn't it odd that that's not the case in an adverse abandonment type of situation?
You'll have to ask board counsel about that because this is the board's policy. It's not mine. I mean, the board announced
this. We will ask them to. In fact, I would like an order giving 10 days to each side to brief the question of the availability and procedure for adverse abandonments under the 1994 statute. As I think Judge Kavanaugh and I both have some real concerns about how this case is supposed to go forward. And perhaps Judge Ginsburg did not mean to preclude him.
Judson, the availability and?
And procedural requirements for, as this question Judge Kavanaugh raises is most perplexing. If there is an adverse, why doesn't the trunk line have the same rights in the adverse proceeding that it would have if there were an NSR abandonment petition?
I don't know.
Maybe get some illumination.
May it please the court, I am Virginia Strasser, and I represent the respondents, the Surface Transportation Board, and the United States of America. I have allotted 3 minutes of my time to counsel for interveners, Mr. Hefner. This is an adverse abandonment case that's in a unique posture because Chicago Lakeshore has expressed an interest in acquiring the line and attempting to renovate it and attract traffic. And therefore, Norfolk Southern's lack of interest in the line really isn't what's relevant here. But we do agree that Norfolk Southern has not opposed this before the board, and its 57-page treatise certainly indicates that it believes that the board should not exercise its jurisdiction in this type of on these facts because it's its line and it is free to exercise its business judgment and clearly has chosen not to seek abandonment.
Staying for now in the context of adverse abandonment precedents, it seems that a key factor in a lot of the cases is whether there's a viable shipper. And that's not the case here if you take Notre Dame at its word.
Your Honor, the fact that Chicago Lakeshore has been plugging away for at least 4 years in trying to acquire this line and to attract shippers simply suggests to the board that it is too soon to know whether there will be a need for future rail.
What's a reasonable time to pick up on Judge Ginsburg's question?
Your Honor, certainly the board has not pinned itself down, and so I cannot speak
for the board,
but
makes
I agree
it,
that
I mean, that makes it
yes,
hard for the community. Yes, it makes it
right.
hard for
and
everyone involved
would,
to really have faith in the process.
I would suggest that 2 or 3 years
How
from
long?
The time, 2 or 3 years probably is a reasonable time. If Chicago Lakeshore has not moved forward, has not succeeded in buying the line or has bought the line but has not been true to its word to renovate it or has renovated but simply hasn't found any shippers, there would certainly be, I think, a very different response from the board if petitioners came back then and said, well, we've waited and nothing's happened.
Is that 2 or 3 years from today or 2 or 3 years from the board's decision?
Your Honor, I think certainly it has to be after the court's decision, because until this court rules, it seems that all the parties are at a stalemate and nothing is going to happen until there is some certainty. And
well, the board seemed to approach this in part on the basis that as long as CLS was spending money and pursuing this, it was at least some possibility that there was some possibility that it would that it would come to fruition. Pardon me. So I'm not sure why what is a reasonable time wouldn't be geared to how long CLS retains its interest and backs it up with money.
Your Honor, again, I certainly don't speak for the board, and I would hate to be pinned down to a specific time frame. I think that's why the board used the language reasonable period of time, and it would rely on the factors
like to be pinned
that
down.
Are presented.
Crazy.
But I don't think that the parties need to wait 7 years, as was the case in the Denver and Rio Grande case.
All right, yeah.
And nobody's suggesting
well, that's
that
the Enoch Arden rule, right? After 7 years, you presume that person's dead. Not before that.
Right. And certainly that line was dead by then. So it could be a year later after this court has ruled. I really can't, you know, say that the specific time is what's relevant. It's really what steps have occurred after this judicial certainty, and Chicago Lakeshore has a green light to proceed. If it isn't able to proceed and it's clear that it's stymied at that point, then all that the board has attempted to do here is to give this line an opportunity to be restored and not short-circuit those efforts.
It's been 14 or 15 years. In the Denver case, for example, right, the carrier was opposed to the abandonment, right? But there was no possibility. I think it was highly speculative whether there would be shipper interest. Why isn't that the same here?
Because there the issue is really between the party seeking the adverse abandonment and the incumbent railroad. It's very different here where you have a would-be carrier short line coming in. And I'd like to address the OFA question that you've raised in that context. If Norfolk Southern had sought abandonment, certainly Chicago Lakeshore could have come in with an offer of financial assistance and the board would have considered that. So I think that this case is closely analogous to that setting. However, where a party has sought adverse abandonment, it is board policy that it's contradictory to the very finding that the board's been asked to make. If it grants adverse abandonment, it's made a finding that there's no overriding federal interest in preserving that rail line. And it's inimical to that finding to suggest that a party can then come in and say, oh, but I'd like to take it over, because the board has already made a determination that the line should be allowed out of the national rail system. And I'd like to, if I may, address the 1994 law. Since Judge Sentelle has been asking about that, I don't think that there's anything in the statute that restricts the extension of long-standing precedent on the part of the ICC and now the STU.
What do you make of the fact that the Tex-Mex case used the language that nothing in the statute says who must file the petition? The 1994 statute says who must file the petition. Do you not see that as different?
Your Honor, I think that certainly we are happy to brief it in a supplemental brief if that's necessary.
Okay, you made the statement, now nothing restricts, but I think that turns administrative law on its head. We've said over and over, an agency doesn't look to see what restricts its power. An agency is required to look to see what grants its power.
This court.
I see nothing in the 1994 statute that grants the board power to entertain an adverse abandonment.
This court has looked at an adverse abandonment case in Cross Harbor subsequent to that law and did not see that as an issue.
Well, that's not a precedent for the point then.
What about the language in the statute that says an abandonment or discontinuance may be carried out only as authorized under this chapter? That seems to be restrictive language, not just lack of authorization. Mm-hmm.
I think that any agency, and certainly the STB, has the authority to flesh out its statutory authority, and that pre-existing precedent is presumed to be endorsed by Congress unless it has explicitly rejected
it. Unless it has changed the statute. Here, Congress, in the particulars we're talking about, has changed the statute. I don't think that argument, frankly, gets you anywhere. If you want to argue for that power, you're going to have to show us where this power comes from. And we've said over and over that agencies cannot do what you just said, flesh out their power. They have to have power granted by Congress. We've said, use the language, they're not creatures of the Constitution. They're creatures of statute. They have only the powers that statutes grant them. And if there were no Tex-Mex case, if there were no pre-1994 cases, I'm sort of at a loss to see where this power would come from. By the way, I'd like to have intervener address in a supplemental brief along with the party.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just say that...
Counsel, excuse me. Look, are you addressing Judge Sentell's point?
Excuse me?
You're about to address Judge Sentell's point.
No, I think that we need to
brief that. Before you go to something else, let me ask you this. The board here purported to be balancing factors relevant to the public interest, right? Not just rail policy, but rather the hardship to adjacent landowners and so on, the reversionary interest mm-hmm. and all that. Does the board have any claim to deference or expertise in evaluating things other than the rail policy? When it's dismissive of the brothers' concern about the rail crossings or the crossing the track, pardon me, on through running through their campus, why should we treat that as, or should we treat that as something within the board's expertise?
Yes, Your Honor, I think you should treat it as part of the balancing test that the board uses to weigh the competing interests, and that's part of its statutory authority under Section 10903. And the interests of landowners, reversionary interests in seeking quiet title to their land, while always something that, you know, an adjacent landowner may be interested in, doesn't necessarily dictate the need to authorize the adverse abandonment of a line.
Well, is there any case imaginable then in which the board says the rail policy here outweighs the interests of the adjacent landowners and a court could disagree? Or would we just have to accept that balancing, in which case we needn't have shown up today?
Well, in Cross Harbor, Your Honor, the board sided too superficially, without enough analysis, not enough independent analysis, with the city. And this court said, well, you haven't done your balancing. You haven't considered the interests of shippers and weighed those interests. So I think this court has endorsed the role of the board in doing this balancing.
It's just doing something that's not incoherent or self-contradictory, and then we have to deny the petition, right?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. And if we have to deny the petition, as long as the board isn't self-contradictory or incoherent, is that the idea?
As long as the board has exercised its judgment and its expertise and has come up with
judgment?
A reasonable outcome, I think, yes, you do have to.
What was the board's judgment on why Conrail doesn't control this case?
Conrail was an extreme situation, Your Honor, where the party was trying to reactivate the High Line straight through city streets and apartment buildings and would have
as opposed to trying to reactivate the coal line straight through residential neighborhoods and campuses.
Well, New York City's a rather denser area, and there was a great deal of more
Did
money
involved.
Did the
board involved. Say this? Did the board say that in its opinion?
No, Your Honor. I'm trying to characterize the difference
yeah,
in
but
answer
we're limited,
to the
We're limited to yeah. The board's rationale for, assuming the case is relevant.
The board found that it was both infeasible and economically impractical to restore the High Line for the purposes that were sought there for waste haulage. That was a case that's over here on a continuum. And certainly this case is much closer
wasn't
to the center
the
in terms
of
weighing interests.
Wasn't the lack of shipper interest a factor there?
There was a shipper interest, the waste hauler in Conrail. However,
yeah,
the board did not find
that
to be
BFI said they would not interest. They would not pursue shipments over a line that engendered community opposition. Right? And
that
the board
is,
didn't say, well, that might change.
That is true, Your Honor, but there were so many other factors at play in that case that I would submit that that's an extreme example, and that is at one end of a continuum. And this is a close case. This is much closer to the center in terms of weighing factors. But the city's interest in the sewer line did not persuade the board that it could not go forward with this project, however valid and important it was to the city, without causing the line to be abandoned. There's no evidence in the record that the city sought an easement from the current owner, Norfolk Southern, or that Norfolk Southern denied it. And there is record evidence that Chicago Lakeshore, if it acquires the line, would be willing to grant just that such an easement as that.
What I don't get is if you look at Modern Handcraft and the Conrail case that Judge Ginsburg raised and the Denver case, the two factors that link those cases is that the track hadn't been used for a long time, usually over 10 years, and that there wasn't any serious shipper interest, right? And all those cases were adverse abandonment cases.
And what makes
and that's what is exactly true here.
What makes this case unique and where that precedent doesn't really apply is the fact that Chicago Lakeshore has been waiting in the wings to attempt to
restore. But in those cases, there was a carrier that was interested in still, in some of those cases, there was a carrier still interested in maintaining the line, but there were no shippers, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's true here.
It is not clear that there are no shippers. And
it
the
is
court,
clear.
The,
certainly isn't clear that there are any.
People could change their mind, but if you take people at their word, there's one potential shipper, and the potential shipper has said, not now, not ever.
I think that Your Honors have raised, however, the very point that the board was concerned with, and that is that it is not practical to continue to ship coal by truck when there's an option for rail.
Well, since the price of gas has gone down a lot recently, it's much more practical to ship it by truck right now than it was 6 months ago.
It went back up last week or so.
Yes.
I filled up recently.
This really was a question of timing, and I think that the board felt it was premature to pull the plug.
Premature after 14 or 15 years with rail tracks that you look at those pictures, it's completely grown over and paved over, it's ridiculous.
14 or 15 years under Norfolk Southern's ownership. If that were all the facts in this case, it would be open and shut. But Chicago Lakeshore has not yet had an opportunity to proceed, and the board felt that it was reasonable to give it that chance. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Hear from the intervener.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning, Counsel.
My name is John Hefner. May it please the court. My name is John Hefner. I appear here for the intervener, Chicago Lakeshore. We'll call them that if I might. Chicago Lakeshore is a startup Class 3 short line railroad, and like the other 500 short line railroads that provide a lot of the local freight distribution in this country, they too started as non-carriers. Now, Chicago Lakeshore can close this transaction quickly, not in a reasonable time, quickly. Chicago Lakeshore has estimated that it will cost about $470,000 to restore the switch, bring the line back into condition. Norfolk Southern agrees.
To do what?
To put the switch back in.
No, I know. To build track for a train to nowhere.
No, sir.
Notre Dame has said it doesn't want the shipments.
Today, Notre Dame says that. Notre Dame said, yes, we're interested. My client spent 2 days and five meetings negotiating with Notre Dame. Then Notre Dame says, nah, we're not interested. But in a newspaper article, they said, we're not interested, but maybe we will be interested.
Relying on a reporter's quotes in a newspaper article is pretty
I understand, Your Honor.
Those of us who have been quoted.
Yeah, that's very weak, I would say.
I've been quoted, too. But as Judge Sentell has correctly observed, and yes, for my car, gas is now $2.05 per gallon. We have an energy crisis. We have global warming. Everybody concedes it. And maybe, once again, the university will say, yeah, maybe we do need rail. So they, just like politicians, they flip-flop back and forth all the time. But even if we don't have University of Notre Dame as a coal shipper, as a rail shipper, there is at least one other shipper, and it's identified in the record. I believe it's called Steel Warehouse, Steel Storage and Supply. And my client is busily at work right now.
The board didn't rely on that.
I believe they mentioned it by footnote. I don't remember if they actually cited them by name. But my client is trying to develop what's called a transload facility. In other words, a facility where companies would truck in their freight and it would be put on rail. So the client is working very diligently to build other traffic and to make this line viable, even if University of Notre Dame for the next 40 years says no rail now, no rail never. But when gasoline, or I should say fuel oil, rises to $140 or $150 a gallon, they may say, we want rail. And
they may not be using coal anymore.
Correct. They have a 20-year contract obligation to use coal. So we can only predict, and hopefully all be around in 20 years to watch it. I hope to be. So the fact is that this shipper, Notre Dame, is a flip-flopper. Now, on the cost of rehabilitation, Norfolk Southern, which is an expert on these matters, has said it's not economically prohibitive to restore the line to rail. Now, I would like to address a couple of other things that you've talked about that people have alluded to.
A lot of time is up. We'll give you a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Community opposition. As you correctly observed, Judge Sentell, the community is split. Yes, there's some against it, but we submitted in the record 10 pages of newspaper letters to the editor, emails, and other expressions of interest from people who would like to see the railroad come back. I'd also like to...
Disputing that the community is primarily opposed to the line?
I would
say... Predominantly opposed to the line?
No, Judge Kavanaugh. I would say it's probably more like 50-50. The current administration in the city government is opposed, but they don't serve for life. They serve for several years. I don't know when the mayor's term comes up, but as we have observed just a few weeks ago, governments change and there are new policies in Washington.
So it's not like Venezuela or Chicago.
No, sir. So, and in terms of my client's commitment, my client has spent, I'll guess, $200,000 or more on lawyers and consultants. My client is committed to bringing back this rail line. So we have an existing traffic flow. That's 3,500 truckloads of rail traffic, 3,500 truckloads a year that has historically moved by rail, and it can move by rail again.
Does CLS have any operation, any rail operations anywhere?
No, sir. No, Judge Ginsburg, it does not. But like every short line that I've represented, and I've represented quite a few, it began as those other short lines also began one time, maybe 20, 30 years ago, as a non-carrier. And today, they're major operations. If I might close on this point, if you were the man from Mars, perhaps the woman from Mars, looking down at the situation, seeing 3,500 truckloads of coal moving across the city streets back and forth every day, considering global warming and energy shortages, high fuel prices coming back, wouldn't you say, what is wrong with this picture? Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Petitioner, we're out of time. We'll give back 2 minutes for rebuttal. You don't have to take it, but you're welcome.
I just have two comments. One, I'm pretty familiar with the record. I don't recall anything about a steel warehouse. In any event, it would be on the south side of the St. Joe River. It would not impact the section that goes through the campus of the two colleges. The other thing is this energy issue. The identical issue was raised in the Denver case. The board turned a deaf ear to it. I can't understand. If they're going to go one way in one, why are they going another way in another 3 months later?
Well, it's an odd thing about this situation, because ordinarily, as the board notes in a footnote, ordinarily completing the delivery by rail would be less expensive, or is less expensive. And if the public press has any indication, trucks running through communities, carrying coal running through communities, are an environmental problem in many areas because of the dust. So putting aside the traffic, just the coal dust that they spread. So it seems a little anomalous, and I think maybe this is an important feature in the board's decision, that it seems anomalous that the university is taking, or the brothers and sisters are taking, the position that they are, and it may not be a forever position.
All I can say is I'm looking at what Notre Dame wrote, and that's what's in the record. The rest is just...
Well, what they wrote had five conditions. Isn't that right? Yeah. They meant they had five ifs in there.
That's
if this
right.
happens and if that happens.
That was what the dissenting opinion notes, that there's been 3 years have passed. None of those have changed. So, I mean, as Strasser admitted, the whole thing is at a stalemate at this point.
What is the harm of leaving it that way for a reasonable time?
The harm is simply that if the board follows its past way of slowly enacting this or that, how many years do we have to wait?
Well, whatever what is the harm in the interim?
The harm in the interim primarily is the inability to begin the construction of the federally mandated sewer system that separates sanitary from wastewater.
Now, the board did address that. Did they err
They addressed it, but they kind of dismissed it, said, well, that didn't really take into consideration what you're going to have to pay the Norfolk Southern. I can tell you right now that the savings figure that was given to the board included the cost of acquiring the right-of-way from the Norfolk Southern.
That's in the record?
I don't think it's... All we say is we would save, I think it was multi-million dollars, the city would save multi-millions of dollars by being able to go through the existing right-of-way rather than tearing up the streets. But, you know...
What was the board's answer? Didn't they say you could go under it?
They went with something that Mr. Hefner had put in. I mean, there's a lot of hearsay in this case. Too much. And as a result, he intimated that, well, they had talked to some city engineer, and he said, well, we could just as easily go the streets. When I talked to the city of South Bend, I was told that no, that the real alternative was to go down this right-of-way. It's tailor-made for it. It goes through an area that is readily available. It's caused no disruption to the city. And, you know.
So the idea would be to put a linear pipeline under the right-of-way, correct?
That is correct. Now, I don't know.
And a running trail on top?
And a running trail on top.
And is that inconsistent with subsequent rail use? Or is it just during the construction?
It depends on the weight of the rail cars. I mean, I don't know if.
It's a 100-foot-wide right-of-way.
At parts it is and parts it isn't. Well, I guess on that side of the river, I think it is all 100 foot, but I'm not totally sure.
So it wouldn't have to be in the load-bearing substructure?
Probably not. But, you know, it again, I really.
Is the city under a timetable to construct this?
If they would like to do it as soon as possible. Is there? The cost, I guess, is. When do you have to put it in sometime? When?
I think the answer is we don't know. How's that for an answer?
We don't know. Judge once told me that was the smartest answer I ever gave to an answer or to a question.
We'd like to hear it more often than some of the evasive attempts that we get, I think. All right, I think this case is submitted. We will look forward to briefs with 10 days from all parties and interveners on the question of jurisdiction and procedure on the 1994 Act adverse abandonments.
10 pages
in 10 days. Is that agreeable to my colleagues?
Yep.
Okay.